Om Shanti, everybody. Good evening and Happy New Year. The first day of 2019. It always feels to me auspicious how you spend the first day of the new year, set something in motion that can last. And it feels a very powerful first day of our special time of remembrance. I don't know if you'd agree with that. It feels a very powerful beginning to our time of special remembrance, and eating the meal this evening in silence was very lovely. Reminded me of my first visits to Madhuban, where we would always eat in silence. And it was very nice. So this evening we have a chance to go back in time a little and reminisce some of the early days of the establishment of service here in London. And I was churning this idea of establishment and the early days. And it seemed to me that there isn't just one establishment of this yagya, that actually establishment is renewing itself at different points all the time, in actual fact. And I remember a story of when Dadi Janki came to the yagya. She was a year after many of them, and she had this sense that she had come late after just a year and wanted to do something to try and catch up a little bit. And that was where her sanskar of deeply churning the murali came from, because she wanted to really absorb and go quickly to make up that time. And those who were around in the late 1960s possibly had a sense that they had come late. In fact, in some of the muralis, Baba will say, you know, you've come late. So kind of early and late is actually relative, because it was late for the establishment of the first phase, but obviously the establishment of foreign service hadn't yet started, so it was early for that. And so as we talk this evening, I'd encourage you to really just try and draw out the jewels that are relevant to each one of us in our field of service. Because each one of us has a unique part to play. And we're talking about the establishment of London, but you know, each place has had its early days, has had its new beginnings. Each centre, each country has had its own story of establishment. And in your own field of service, whether that be maybe social media and technology, well, you were there at the establishment of that form of service. And you may be working on something which is absolutely brand new and hasn't been done yet. So we're each of us pioneers in our own way, and we are each of us there at the establishment of our special part in this yagya and in this drama. So I'm going to be trying to draw out some of those themes as we go through this evening. There's a lovely quote by Oscar Wilde, which I'll share with you, and that is, "Be yourself. Everyone else is already taken." Which I think is lovely. You know, there's no point looking at anyone else, because that's their part. All you can look at is yourself, and be yourself, actually, because that's who you are. So in telling this story of the early days of establishment in London, there really is no other place to start than with Sister Jenti, who I remember Baba calling a couple of times a lucky star. And in many ways, Jenti was the lucky star that was just in the right place at the right time. Whether you've always felt it to be a lucky star, Jenti, I don't know. It's probably had its challenges along the way. But there you were in 1969. Brahma Baba had left the body in January. And you came, or you were asked to come back to London in the middle part of that year. Do you remember now how you felt when that proposition was first put to you?
I said no. I didn't like the idea of coming back to London at all. And it was only because Baba said to me, you have to go. And Baba put it very sweetly. Baba said, Baba's sending you for service, not for karmic accounts. And so that persuaded me that, yes, there was some benefit in coming back.
Because you had gone back to India having lived in London already. You'd fallen in love with God. It was all happening in India. There was this sense of a new phase in service happening in India, and yet here were you going somewhere where there wasn't anything.
It felt like being sent out to the desert, a place where there was no center, a place where I wouldn't have others who were following the same path. Rashmiban, my Lokic mother, was following, but you don't see your mother as being your traveling companion on a journey. And so, and I knew that there'd be various challenges that I'd have to face, and I wasn't quite ready to face them. But because Baba said, more or less, it wasn't an option, it was Baba telling me, you have to go. And so that then gave me the courage and the faith to say, okay. So I came back, and the challenges were bigger than I'd anticipated. And it took all the way through till 1985 to accept that, yes, London was my place to be doing service, and that this was where Baba really wanted me to be. So it took a long time to accept it.
And did you have a plan? Did you sit down and think, right, I'm going to start with this and then move on to that, and then this will then happen?
Baba's muralis are always unlimited, and Baba says, contact the education minister, contact this minister, that minister, write a letter to the Pope, write a letter to the Queen. And so I tried all of those things.
You wrote a letter to the Queen?
I did. And I didn't even get an acknowledgement, so they probably couldn't read it and threw it in a bin. So I did all of those things, but Jagdish Bhai had said something that was very practical. He'd said that, see if there are still people around who were connected with the British Raj, and they would have a karmic connection with India, having been part of that system, and they would also probably still have a lot of love for India, and they would be the people you could connect with. And then there were more practical things, like Baba saying, go to the temples, and London already had a few temples at that time, so there were practical things that were very helpful. The message from Jagdish Bhai was extremely valuable, because that led us, when the first delegation came, that led us to a meeting with Lord Mountbatten. And it turned out that he had a lot of love for India, was very, very nostalgic about India. He didn't think he would go back to India, which of course he never did, but because Jagdish Bhai was inviting him to come to India, and he looked hesitant and said, well, I'm not sure that I'm going to do that. But it was really lovely to meet with him and just feel his charm and his love for India and spirituality also, I think. And so that was a very practical thing that made some service happen. Another name that Jagdish Bhai had given was Aldous Huxley. And he was alive in those days. I'm talking about a long time ago, 1971. And again, just a simple letter to him, but he accepted. And Jagdish Bhai spoke to him about the cycle and the repetition of the cycle. And I was a silent observer of their conversation, because an author, a historian, and Baba's historian, and it was a fascinating conversation about, well, is it possible truly for everything to repeat identically? So there were practical things that Baba had told us, that others like Jagdish Bhai mentioned, that actually did materialize.
that was jumping forwards a little bit, staying with those very early days. Did you arrange programs that no one came to? Did you knock on doors that were closed in your face? Was there a sense of, you know, the mountain that you were trying to climb was just perhaps a little too steep?
There were a few programs where we had 1, 2, 5 people, and we thought that was not too bad. And so it was Rajni Ben and myself. I'd make the leaflet, we'd make the tolly, and we'd organize the place and sometimes have to clean the place and distribute the leaflets and then wait and see.
And how were you viewed, do you think, as a young woman and also a young woman from Indian origin?
At that time, there wasn't any racism that I could perceive. Mm. The racism started actually with the influx of Asians from Africa, which came a few years later. So for me, this was by then normal. And I think because it's an Indian body, nobody else thought it was strange, because an Indian, whether it's young or older woman in a sari, it's not a big deal. But the ideas that I was sharing were considered bizarre. I remember going to a yoga organization. I remember the name of the man who headed it, Christopher Hills. Those of my generation might remember. Oh, Rosemary's nodding her head. So he ran quite a famous yoga institute, and he gave us an appointment, went to meet him, and Rajni Ben would accompany me on these events. And he started asking me, well, what is it that you've been studying in India? Because I'd begin by saying I'd been in India, I'd studied these things, and say, what have you been studying? And I spoke about yoga, and yoga meaning union of soul and God. And he probed a little bit, and very quickly the idea of non-omnipresence came up, and he could not take it. And he just wasn't ready to think about the whole subject of a personal relationship with God. And he was very dismissive, not very nice at all. And so it was metaphorically a door shut in mm-hmm. my face at that point. That meeting, I don't think I'll forget.
For me, this part of your story is an important remembering of how it often is with new ideas. It's a bit like when you plant a seed in the autumn. The seed actually sits in the ground right through the winter, not actually doing very much. Mm. It's almost like this taking in the environment, taking in inspiration, before then you start to see visible shoots and roots coming forth. And it seems like you very much went through that, I won't call it a long night of the soul, but a time of really feeling like not much was happening.
Nothing was happening outside. And I then wrote to Dadiji, Dadi Prakash Muni, saying, I want to come back to India. There's nothing happening here. There's a waste of time here. And she knew that I had things to settle here, and she couldn't just say, yes, come, most welcome. She didn't say that. What she said was, and I think Rosie Ben, some of you might know her, the sister from Chennai. So Rosie Ben must have been in Madhuban, because the response came back in excellent English. Because otherwise Dadiji had said to me, you write to me in English and I'll reply to you in Hindi. And I'd been learning Hindi, reading. Writing I still can't manage, but learning. And so I'd agreed to that. And now this letter came back, and it was in very good English. And I think Rosie Ben must have been Daddy's secretary at that point. And the message was, there's always service to be done, but maybe it's time for you to do self-service first. And that saved me, because otherwise I think I would have got very disheartened and a lot of waste thoughts and maya maybe. But that message I took as a direction from Baba, And I sincerely practiced that and made a timetable of tapasya for yoga. You know, today, 4 hours yoga that we're talking about for 50 hours to accumulate seems not possible. But at that time, I was managing more than that, several hours a day, because I was free. And also study and the practice of soul consciousness, these things saved my life. And I think that was the power that I was accumulating for the future, both for my survival, but also for service.
That's beautiful. I'd like to move on to Manubhai now, if I may, because Manubhai, you have the honour of being the first brother, Hindi-speaking brother. The first Indian Hindi-speaking brother in London. I think I'm right in saying that. And your mother had sent you from India at the age of 18 because she felt you would have more job prospects over here in London. And yet, when you arrived, you really weren't that impressed with what you found.
My mother could see that my attention was in the sports, nothing else. And she could see that I would be useless over there, won't be able to earn money and burden on the family. So she persuaded me to go to my brother here in Coventry. So I had no choice. I said, okay, I'll just go. Because it was a change for me as well. I came here, I regretted it from the first day. Because the buildings over here were so dreadful. All the buildings look same, streets look more or less the same, sky always dull and dreary, and about to rain kind of appearance. Cold, wind, I couldn't stand it. I wanted to go back the next day. But it was not possible because my brother needed me in the shop. So I stayed there for the timing. I didn't like it a bit, to be very honest.
I think it's also fair to say that we wouldn't have described you at that time as being particularly religious or devout in your bhakti.
Not at all religious. But I had an attachment to Krishna because of his character, playful character, so, like myself. So that's about it. I was connected with him internally, mm-hmm. but not going to the temples or doing any particular rituals or anything.
So you obviously then came from Coventry to London. How did you get caught up in this group of pioneering yogis in Tennyson Road, as they were by then? How did that happen?
I was lonely for a while because I could not get on with my sister-in-law. My brother has recently been married, and I could not get on with them. So I had to leave. I had to leave and find a single bedsit somewhere. So in the single bedsit, there was, came 1963 now. I came here in 1960. And it was so cold one night that my whole face was frozen, fingers were frozen. As I was walking on the road, literally frozen.
It was a cold winter.
It was very cold. Mm. All the pipes were frozen as the water was coming out of the drain. Some of you may remember this. And I couldn't stand it. I said, times like this, I got to have something warm. Coffees and teas are too boring. So I bought a packet of cigarettes. 5 Woodbine cigarettes, about as long as a finger.
And with the intention of warming your hands.
Just wanted to have a bit of warmth inside, because cigarette has got the illusion of giving you the heat. It has got the fire at the tip of it.
It's so. We'll believe you. It's fine. It's fine.
So I brought it in my flat. I lit up, and I loved it. My head was going round and round, and for me it was a fun. But I said, it's not a good thing that I bought 5 cigarettes. I should have bought only one. So let me finish all of them. Because it was, I was feeling fun, you know, kind of high. And that was that. Who came the other day, it was cold just the same. And then I said, cigarettes won't help me. I got to try something a bit more warmer than that. So I bought a bottle of sherry. And that was also fun. Now together was even more fun. Anyhow, so somehow or the other I got attached to both of them. Because they are very addictive, as some of you may know. And then I found London was really, really terrible place. Boring in 60s, early, mid-60s was really boring. Shops had to be closed once a week, 1.5 days a week. And at that time, the whole atmosphere was really kind of dull. And there was no really dance place or bright lights or anything like that.
So you were looking for a bit of excitement in your life?
I was looking for excitement.
And you obviously found it?
I found it in the West End at the end.
Oh.
I was really very happy then.
This is a very long answer, Manubhai, to how you came across the Brahmakumaris in Tennyson Road.
I'm about to tell you this. So there I met Concetta, my wife. We got on very, very well. I don't know why you lot are laughing.
We're just completing the full spectrum of all the vices. It's fine.
Soon came children. And I was feeling so pressurized. I said to Concetta that once a week I got to go out all by myself to enjoy myself with friends. And that's how I got onto the vices of drinking more and more. And the life was really getting boring because at that time there was so much discrimination. I could not find any good jobs or accommodation. Wherever you go, there was always this, no coloreds, no Asians. Well, the price was very reasonable, but no coloreds, no Asians. So it was very disappointing. So like this, my disappointments accumulated. So I got onto these drinks and smoke. My sister was really worried, my elder sister. She had joined the Brahmakumaris 6 months before that. So she became very clever with me. So she says to me that you go around all over the city, so you know more about the city and people and all this. So why don't you go to this Brahmakumaris and you tell me how they are like. So I was being arrogant, young man, arrogant. I said, yes, yes, of course, I'll find out for you. So on one Sunday I went. Now I'm telling how I came to Brahmakumaris. Chapter 2. And I punched the doorbell. And there was...
This was Tennyson Road?
Sorry?
Tennyson Road.
That was in Tennyson Road.
Because that was October 71, Tennyson Road was there.
There was a year approximately 75, 76.
Yeah.
Jayanti Ben opened the door as it happens. She gave me such a good smile and such a welcome. Welcome to Baba's house, and with her a famous smile. I fell for that also. I came in, she offered me a cup of tea. She says, don't be shy, this is Baba's house and all this. So she made me feel very much at home.
And what was your impression of the sisters who were there? Because if I remember right, it was Sister Madeline was there at that time, is that right?
Sister Amanda.
And Madeline.
Madeline was.
And Big Joy was there?
Yes.
And Jayanti Ben and who else?
Ben.
Sudesh Ben was there.
Janki Ben, Sudesh Ben.
And Rajni Ben was there.
Rajni Ben, Dadi Janki.
Yeah. And what did you think of them?
Sorry?
What was your experience of meeting them?
Sudesh Didi was very sweet, very motherly, so I felt very comfortable with her, still do. Janti Ben was official. Too clever for me. She asked me about the introduction of God. So I said arrogantly, you know, it's Krishna, of course, because all the Indians, well, vast majority of them, they worship Krishna. So I replied forthrightly that it is Krishna. So she says to me, you're wrong, you know. And there I was with my mouth stuck open. So what do you mean I'm wrong? Everybody knows Krishna is God. She asked me the question that I remember distinctly, Janti Ben. I was a guinea pig for her then. Maybe the first one. So she asked me, who are you? So I told her my name. So she asked me again. I said, probably poor thing is deaf. Then she gave me the explanation of the soul. She gave me a wonderful explanation that is still with me. And then the differentiation between the soul, sinful soul, Mahatmas, Dharmatmas, that's religious founders, Devatmas, and then Paramatma is God. And I was really, really impressed with her knowledge. All the inside story coming out, Janti Ben. Very impressed. I said, she's so smart. She knows exactly what she's talking about. And I've been so stupid, you know. I could not explain to her that why Krishna is God. I was impressed. And later on, I said to myself, so what? You know, I was not looking for God particularly. Ravan was speaking to me. He was waiting for me at the gate of Tennyson Road. And she fed me nicely tollies and biscuits and all this. Anyhow, so this is how I got started and kind of curious with Brahma Kumaris.
Well, you obviously found something there which kept you. We'll come back to you again in a moment and hear a little bit more about what that was. But I'd like to just move down one line. I think you need to pass the microphone to Joy. Because we jump forward just a few years to October 1977. And Sister Joy had actually been brought up as a Quaker. So she came from a Quaker family and was very used to the part of a Quaker service at the end where you sit in silence and it's almost like a meditation, which is probably the closest Christianity gets to meditation in actual fact. But you had left your hometown to come to London to study and found a leaflet because you were looking for something that would remind you of your Quaker background. Is that where you were at that time, do you think, Joy?
I was in the process of studying occupational therapy and it dawned on me if I'm not influenced by my... I was easily influenced by the mood of my patients. So I thought, I need to learn to control my mind. And Christianity hadn't shown me that yet. So I thought, well, I'd better find some meditation or something. And so when I found this leaflet at some exhibition that was at the Quaker Meeting House, I thought, oh, there's a class, 6:30 in the morning, 6:30 evening, 7 days a week. I'll try them. It's just down the road. So I knocked on the door and Joy Janice answered the door for me.
Who was that?
Joy Janice.
Big Joy.
And... looked very royally down her nose. Do you have an appointment? No, but the leaflet says you've got a bath. There's me standing in my jeans and bicycle and... Yes, I'll be young. Yes, and so I started the course the next day with Anthony. So after that, it took me a little while to get to morning class, a little bit longer to get to Amrit Vela.
And how was it for you as, not the first, but absolutely one of the first Western-bodied sisters stepping into this organization that was quite newly out of India and trying to preserve the heritage of what had been established in India, and yet offering it to a new audience, to a Western audience. What was that like for you, kind of coming up against that as one of the first ones?
Well, I was. It was very clear, being a white sister in Tennyson Road meditation room, because there were two lines of sisters and three lines of brothers. So sisters were not in the majority. And clearly they all knew a lot more than me, and there are more Indians than there are English, and everything. Sister Jenty took me a little while to realize this, that she was reading Hindi and speaking English. That, like, oh my God, what is that going on here? So that was a bit of a shock. And I think the whole role of the modeling, the Brahma Kumaris has a modeling system, so you just tag along and learn by osmosis. So I didn't know how to put saris on, I didn't know how to speak Hindi or Gujarati or Sindhi, I didn't know how to cook these, I had to be taught how to eat. I think I must have been a bit, that first trip to Leicester, it was, Daddy was giving a lecture, and of course it was in Hindi, and I think when we sat down to eat, it was a little bit like, how is she going to eat? I was helped along the way.
You mean there were no knives and forks then?
No, you sit on the floor and you have your plate and you eat with your fingers. But anyway, things have changed over the years. We actually got chairs here, and Tennyson Road didn't get chairs.
No.
If we had chairs, we wouldn't have got so many people in anyway. But I was definitely, I spent 16 years learning Hindi. I learned how to put a sari on in 2 minutes. It took me 20 minutes to start with, but I've got it down to two. And all sorts of different bits and pieces. You know, in Madhaban they were teaching me tolis and thinking I might become a fantastic centre-walla cook, but actually that never happened. I think ultimately I discovered that trying to follow the letter of the Sakar Muralis and the Mariada principles and doing my utmost to be as Indian stroke spiritual as I possibly could, I eventually kind of cracked a bit, because actually it didn't work. And modelling is good as long as there's a model which is pretty close to what you are, but as we all know, we're seeds of our own little branches. There isn't actually another one of you anywhere, because you are the leaders, we are the leaders of something. So at some point you've got to click and realise this modelling system can only go so far. I've got to find out who I am. So, it does take a little while to get that point through to my little head.
It's a bit like in Lokic life, the eldest child is often the one that is experimented on because the parents are just learning how to be parents. And then as it goes down the line, they get more practiced and it becomes easier for the ones who come along behind. And I guess you were the big sister. You were one of the early big sisters that went through that for the first.
I did have Waddy and Denise Ben and Madeline and Eleanor and things like that, and Joy as well.
And then in 1980 you moved to Olive Road.
In Conchita,
of course. You moved to Olive Road and Sister Joan was there, Sister Nola, who was originally from South Africa. Yes. And then we had Sister Jenny, who was actually my Lokic sister's best friend at university. So I remember as a young teenager hearing the story of my sister's friend who had literally taken every possession that she owned and set up a shop in the student union building and sold all her possessions and was just left with a few white clothes, which I thought was pretty cool. and then we had Big Joy and you, and that must have been quite a special time as well, coming together as a group of Western sisters.
Yes, there is a very entertaining story of in Tennyson Road, when we had class, English Murali, Daddy would give class, then Hindi class would go downstairs, and English class carried upstairs, and on Thursday, we just, the English class just went out the front door, you see. I got encouraged to actually stop and go in and have her book, and one day Daddy said to me, she's giving me the nectar and the toli, Shakti Bhavan Banayenge, or something equivalent to that. But basically, and then what the translation come, Daddy wants you to make a Shakti Bhavan. I said, oh, I thought, that's interesting. What's a Shakti Bhavan? I like making things. But not having a clue. It took a little while to actually, because there wasn't any other sisters to live with, because they're all with families or something. So it took a little while for this request to manifest, and eventually in 1980 it became a reality, and we had this flat where there was four of us living here.
Well, thank you on behalf of all the Shaktis that have come, the generations behind you, for being the pioneer of that. Yeah. Many, many hundreds of sisters have benefited from that.
It was a practical need in a way, because within Asian communities, everyone is in a family until you get married and you create your own family. So the idea of living as a single individual doesn't kind of, at least it didn't work in the 70s, I don't know what's happening now. but here we were, more and more double foreigners were coming, and I'd left home and was studying in London, so I didn't have family in London. And this became the case for others. So in order for people who are visiting as well, for them to have that sustenance. I mean, the brothers were leading ahead of this, because they had created Shanti Bhavan already. You know, Shanti Bhavan and Pandav Bhavan were existing already. Sisters were just a little bit behind there.
Well,
that was the case at those days. Sisters were definitely behind. Brothers were definitely in front.
The brothers were in front. Well, that's a good point to move on to Brother Jim. My first memory of you, Jim, was actually when Baba was coming in the meditation hall at Madhavan. And it seemed like virtually every single Murali, Baba would find a way at some point or another to reference Joker Jim. He loved saying the words Joker Jim, and you were just always there, and you would always catch his eye, and he would always talk to you directly during the Murali. How was that for you, to be singled out for that attention?
I just thought he's quite sensible. He knew what he was about.
And where did this personality of telling jokes and having humour, has that always been part of your nature, or were you hiding behind that because actually deep inside you were really scared?
Not really, no. No, that's just psychology that you're quoting there. But no, not really. It's just my intrinsic nature, that's all.
Always there. So tell us the story of how you found your way to the Bhavans in London.
Well, I was a very quiet person. I was very interested in metaphysics, and always my whole life has really been sort of spiritual. Through my mother and Christianity, which I found that didn't work, and I kind of drifted. My mother was sort of Christian psychic, and anyway, I was, cut a long story short, I used to go to a psychic circle in Victoria, which was a trance circle, and it was all full of mediums, and they would all go in trance, and we'd have many discourses with discarnate personalities, and it was very interesting. I was very interested in all this kind of area. And one occasion, that everyone went into trance except myself, and a personality came through and said, "I want to talk to you." Well, I was the only person that was kind of aware at that moment, and I said, "Oh, really? That's very nice." And he says, "You think you're very clever? Well, you're not." And he said, "You're wasting your time with this lot." And I like to think it was Brahmabhar, actually. Because I said, "Who are you?" And he said, "I'm a very high yogi. I'm an Eastern yogi, and I come to talk to you. I can't stay here long because the atmosphere isn't pure." And he said, "But I'm just telling you, learn meditation." So after that, I started to look for meditation. I did lots of meditation. I went to this and that and the other.
So this isn't a joke. This was something that you really did experience.
Yeah, I did.
You
yeah.
did?
Yeah. I can't remember, maybe. It may have done. I'm not sure, really, because it's kind of... but anyway, I kind of started to look for meditation. And I kind of like... one of the areas that I used to go to kind of, you know, increase my understanding, I used to go to all these kind of groups and try to learn metaphysics. And they're often very depressing. They would say, oh, it won't be thousands of years before you get enlightenment and all the rest of it. And I'd sit there and it would be... But I'd carried on anyway. And then I went to this organization in Hyde Park, Spiritualist Association, and there was a series of talks which seemed very interesting. There were really like areas of that caught my attention. And so I kind of enrolled with this series of lectures. And I remember... where I sat at the back, and suddenly I noticed there was a very young girl was there, and I thought, wow, she's very young, but you know, Sister Janti was very educational. It just caught me, you know, that it was so interesting. So I carried on with all the talks. It was so, you know, like I was so interested, and it's just I just wanted to learn more and more. And they said, if anybody also is interested, we have meditation as well. We teach meditation, and it's free. And I went, what, free? Because I've been spending a fortune trying to learn meditation everywhere. So I went to this meditation group that was upstairs in this building, and there was a very old lady there. And I thought, oh, this must be the chaperone for Sister Janti. I thought it was the chaperone. And she sat there. She was very, very miserable looking, but I thought, well, okay. And they had a meditation at the end. It was very interesting, kind of. Everything was so interesting. I was so caught with everything. And they said, well, look, they pulled out this picture. It was so kind of on the ball with interesting ways of presenting meditation. It was like, pull this sheet out and stuck it with blue tack, I think it was. I'm not sure. It was unrolled it, and they said, look at this picture. So I looked at this picture, and then there was a lot of phenomena with this picture, and the things, light started to move around. I thought, wow, this is it. I've got to have this picture. And so I kind of like, I forgot about meditation. I was so desperate to try and get this picture. And at the end, I raced to the front and I said to this old lady, I said, can I have this picture? I'd like to buy this picture. And I took out the money to give her, you know. And she said, no, we don't sell this. And she said, but look, she said, you look like a good soul. You can have it. I went, wow, really? So I rolled it up again. It was, you know, those pictures that they used to sell in Madhavan. You know, those small kind of reddish, orangey.
Is this a picture of the soul?
The Baba.
The picture of the
Baba, yeah. And so I took it home and I stuck it on the wall at home, you know, and I said, right. And I sat there and nothing. And, you know, a few nights this went on, and I kind of think, this doesn't work. And so I noticed that there was a number at the bottom, so I rang up and I said, look,
this picture does.
Can I have another one? Could I have another picture? And they were laughing, and I could hear them laughing, actually. It was Sudesh, actually, who was picking his phone up. And she said, well, no, you need to have a certain understanding to go with it. So I said, oh, really? Oh, okay, then. So I went along to Tennyson Road, and actually, Sudesh Ben was my teacher. But, reflecting on it, she never told me anything about the course. We just used to just chat. She asked me more questions than I asked her, and she said, "What does this mean?" It was like talking to my auntie, actually. You know, like she was so sweet, and we had long conversations about everything except the course. So, in fact, I've never done the course, and so I kind of like this is how I, you know, and they say you can come along to class and. And it was wonderful, actually. Tennyson Row for me was, you know, like, I know they hear people describing Tennyson Row was, there was not much there, really, but I never noticed it. It was just, you had this huge personality of Daddy Jenki. It was like a huge, it's like, you couldn't describe it. It was like a great, looking back on it, it was just like a cosmic sun, you know, like, it was just everything. She she just exuded everything, power, love, care, you know, wisdom. He should have pulled my ear a few times as well. But it was a wonderful experience. Even though the conditions were very, very sparse, and there was no chairs, and the most prized place in this place was beside the radiator. because that was the warmest part. But it was an incredible experience. Tennyson Road was an idyll, really, just passed like a dream, actually. It was just a wonderful time for me, actually.
It sounds absolutely magical. Jim's talking there about having his ears pulled a little bit by Daddy, and I know, Manu, you found it quite strict at times as well when you were learning to meditate.
When I was starting to get used to it, Tennyson Road, I found the place was so ordinary. You know, ordinary furniture, lino. But what I liked was the people's manners. They were so sweet. Jayanti Ben, sweet Sudesh Didi, Dadi Janki, of course. I found them so sweet. And inside I was saying, you know, wish my sister was like that. The one who introduced me to the knowledge. Not that I should change, but my sister should become like Jayanti Ben. So, anyhow, after a while, Daddy said to me in a tired voice that you should come and listen to the Murli one day. So I said to myself, Murli? And it's just clicked with me because I was worshipper of Krishna within. So I said, yes, I will definitely come to listen to the Murli. Who plays the Murli? So she really talked to me like a mother to the son. Buddhu is not somebody who plays Murli, which means the versions of God. Anyway, somehow or the other got me curious. So I went there to listen to the Murli now. And there was a sentence in the Murli. That in the golden age there is a river of milk and honey, and look at in the iron age you can't even find paraffin. And that's really, I was sitting like this with my back on the chair, and I sat like this. After a while I said, how does this person know I could not find paraffin yesterday? When I was searching for paraffin. And during, I became so suspicious at the same time, because there was a James Bond era. You know, so who was following me, and why would they follow me for paraffin? Somehow or the other, that sentence got me curious. So I came there here the following day, and there was a sentence like, I am the doctor of all doctors, psychiatrist of all the psychiatrists, and the intellectual of all the intellectuals of the world. And that got me curious as well. I said, what does he think of himself? You know, who is this one? Is, you know, like this, it got my curiosity so roused that I said to myself, I must go to Madhuban to see this speaker, who it is. So I came to that point. But before that, I did a lot of service. Like we used to go to SAGB, was given me the duty to take Sister Jayanti to SAGB. Remember SAGB, Jim?
Where was that?
SAGB.
Oh, that place.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just...
anyhow.
You had a car in those days, which...
I had a car.
...was a rare commodity.
It was ordinary quality, but nevertheless, sisters were happy because there was a young man here with the knowledge of London, owner of the car, and energetic, interested.
So you were a real catch.
I was a real catch for Daddy Jackie.
Can I just share, you talk about cars, that in the early days, they used to have a little, it was a little mini car, mini, wasn't it?
Morris Foster.
Also, it was very small. And you know that at one time, I saw it going by, and it looked like there was nobody in it. And because there was Sister Janti and Daddy, because they were so small, you couldn't see their heads. And it looked, as it went by, the car went by, it looked like no one was driving. And we were going, and so we said, no, Sister Janti's driving. It was hilarious, actually.
Almost always not working. That car, do you remember that?
No, it's a very good car.
And it was problematic. So they were happy inside that the young man is here with his own car. He's got time, interested in going around. And sisters used to go in the cold and wind and rain in the buses or in that special car.
They always made sure you had good tollies then.
So
kept you sweet with good tollies.
Yes, definitely.
But Sister Janti, it was an extraordinary time if you look back to that period, because brother Charlie, brother Ken, brother Simon had already been through, and then you had this motley crew turning up as well. Did you have a sense then that these are Baba's special jewels who have been called and they will become great Maharatis in the future, or did you just see them as, you know, well, we'll humour them for now, but they don't look to me like they've got much potential?
It was amazing to find souls who believed in God, who understood the cycle. I was always amazed that souls could accept the cycle. And so when these souls came along who could understand all of this, I thought, these are very special jewels. And Daddy Janki gave them a lot of love and attention. But Daddy Gulzar came in 1976, and she went to the little Pandit Bhavan, which was above the Afro-Caribbean fish shop. It was actually a grocer and greengrocer and fish and everything. And it was rickety stairs that you'd go up, and that was the first Pandit Bhavan. And Charlie and Aidan and probably Simon, Ken had already, Richard, and Ken had already gone back to Australia by then, but these people were there. And imagine, Daddy Gulzar offered Borg there, and she, tiny little flat, and the message she brought back was very beautiful. She said that Baba has said that you are the souls who belong to the Yagya in the last birth, and this birth you've come to these lands just simply for the sake of service. And so that was the vision we had of souls who were coming, that each one of them is an instrument to share Baba's knowledge with many, many others. It was very intoxicating, very powerful time. And of course, you're reading the Avyat Muralis now, in which Baba praises all the double foreign children so much. Well, through that period of the 70s, and seeing all of this happen. So Ken comes along, goes off to Australia, starts a centre there. You know, it was just magic. Wherever people went, centres would begin. And it just happened.
And Joy, you were talking about being a pioneer of the Western Sister and very much finding your own way through that. And all of you are here today as those who have proven the test of over a long period of time. Baba often talks about this phrase of over a long period of time, and here you all are as the living proof of that. Where, Joy, do you feel you're at now in terms of how you see those years culminating in you and your role in the present moment?
I think those early years, I was probably a good catch of a very young, energetic, creative person who's interested in introversion and spirituality. And I was kept very, very busy. And over time, as my work got more intense and my service role got more intense, something did crack. And so I just kind of stopped everything. But there's also just to really focus on myself. And then there was another time when there was a sister who was from Israel, and she was only there for one night, and she was wanting to share her story. And she was telling me how you know, she was doing some service in Israel and people were turning up saying, I have this phone number to call, or I had to come to this address or whatever. And something just clicked in my head that Baba doesn't need me to do service. It's, he can just put things in people's heads. It's good to keep me busy, and it's good to cooperate and sanskars and merging and dancing and all that. But actually, there's one thing he can't do, and that's fix my inner world. And so I think that's when I really did the turning point, those two sort of things of realizing that I have to actually change the way I am internally to match this sanskars of the Golden Age and non-violence and gentleness and be kind to myself, because I was really vicious to myself inside, quite vicious. And I was not very polite to myself.
Giving yourself a hard time.
Giving myself a very hard time. Mm. And as a consequence, you know, when even Lockett people were saying to me, you don't remember my name, do you? And knowing that I knew I'd seen this guy lots, but I couldn't remember anything about him. And I was thinking, no, I'm defaming the service because I'm so depressed and stressed that I can't even do the job properly. And so I kind of just, I have to change. I really got to change. So then I did that big turning point, and I think I seem to be coming out on the good side at the moment. Better keep quiet, maybe.
And finding your authentic voice within that. Because you're very much involved now with the listening circle, which is about looking at how you relate to others.
Mm.
And how to do that with kindness.
Yes, I'm just trying to understand. It's all very well knowing, you hear them really, you should change this, you should change that. But it's this big sort of umbrella vice that needs to be changed. But how do I know that, what bit of that is in me, and how does that represent inside me? So really understanding the thoughts, the feelings lead to sanskars and that kind of a thing, how to track them back. To know what I have to change, but also being honest and open that it exists, but then how do I relate to it? So, and Baba said, don't give yourself sorry, so give yourself some appreciation for what's going on, but also some gentleness in how I communicate with myself and how I'm prepared to communicate with others, and hopefully, you know, registering how my own speech to myself feels, I can see how it might feel for someone else to receive that. And so thinking again about, well, how to ask people to do things and that kind of thing, I'm more likely to get some help if I don't be rude like I usually am to myself. So, yeah.
Thank you. And Jim, what about you? Because obviously, you know, you're here and many that you were with at that time aren't here now. What?
They are. They're in my heart.
Aww.
Good answer. Yeah.
But what has been your form of self-sustenance over so many years?
I think just following the systems that Baba set up. From the early days, Daddy Jenki really instilled in me the value of Amrivela. And I was very lucky to have that sort of direct connection. Daddy, you know, many times we say, for example, in St. Gabriel's Road, I'd be sitting there, and Daddy would, maybe it was only just me and Daddy, because some, you know, the other sisters would be ironing or something. But Daddy would then tune in and say, tell me about my meditation. She would tell me how to tweak it, to empower it, to change it. And so it's always been a major part of my journey, Amrivela, as a major part, as a means to empower, to clarify, to talk to Baba, to develop a relationship with Baba. So that has been since the early days, from the very beginning up to now. And also I think the love of knowledge. And I think churning of knowledge has been a major joy for me, actually. It's so enjoyable to churn knowledge and to And to share it, but just turn it. It's so nice to go for a walk and to see knowledge opening up, and it just, it nurtures, it's been nurturing me and is nurturing me, and it's such a beautiful thing. And I think another part of the sustenance is really the family. The Brahman family, without it, I wouldn't be here. And I think that, thank you everybody. Mm. But it's, you know, that it's been a major part of my existence, the blessings and the love of the family. And really I always think, I would say to everybody is, let the family into your life. You know, don't stand outside the family. Come into the family and you'll experience the beauty and the power and the love that's there. And it's so enriching. This is Baba's system, and it's helped me and guided me, really. And I think just lastly, without going on too long, that Madhuban has made a massive impact. Even though we used to go once a year, that the impact of Madhuban was so huge, you know, it was so massive. The input that Baba and Madhuban itself. And it sustained, it's only looking back on this, isn't it? Retrospect. At the time we were just children enjoying it, but looking back, and you see it's a wonderful experience, Madhuban. You know, a major part, I think, of my life. And the joy and the happiness that I experienced in Madhuban was wonderful. And meeting Baba, and it's like, just like old friends. My first visit to Madhuban was that I arrived there, and I wanted to go and hug everybody, because I was saying, I know you. And I wanted to go, and they're saying, people said, no, you don't do that. And it seemed to me, everyone seemed so familiar. It seemed to me, this is my family. And it's such a joy, you know, that Madhuban has been for me.
Sister Jenti, someone looking at your story might feel that, you know, you've had a silk thread that you've been walking along. You had a Lokic mother who was already in Gyan. You had Daddy Janki by your side for so many years. And yet I was quite surprised to hear you say earlier that it took you until 1985 to fully accept that this was your part to be here. And that, to me, suggests that, you know, it hasn't necessarily all been plain sailing. What has kept you in the role that you do, which, you know, if there's one word I would use to describe it, it has been tireless. You've been a tireless server through all of this. What has it been that has kept that joy in your step?
Baba's love, that's been the biggest factor. And the second thing has been the Murli. I've always taken a lot from Baba's Murli. And why I love Daddy so much is because I see how she extracts the essence of the Murli and then she shares it with us in classes. So I've loved that also. And so these three things have really kept me going. Baba's love, the Murli, and Daddy's classes. Mm. Yeah, it's been very powerful. And even today, when I find myself facing challenging situations, Baba's Murli, either the Sakar Murli, the body of the Murli, or the blessing, something will give me again an aspect that makes me understand what it is I need to do. And that then carries me through that particular situation.
The magic of the Murli, it is extraordinary how, as Brother Manu was saying, a Murli that can have been spoken a long time ago has a line in it that is so pertinent and relevant to me in this present day. And it almost feels like Baba, with his knowledge of the three aspects of time, is speaking certain points for this moment, for me to hear it today. And that is magic.
Sakar Murli, Avyakt Murli, it was something I was commenting on in class today. That the Avyakt Murli that Baba spoke yesterday, that we read again today, it's absolutely what we need to hear now, the end of the year, the beginning of the new year, and so Baba preparing us for the challenges that are going to come, but also the things that we need to do inside ourselves. So the Murli is magical. It really is.
Manubhai, what has it been for you? You know, you're the first Hindi-speaking brother here in London. You've seen so many souls come and join the family in that time. What has been the thread that has kept you going through all these years?
Mainly the faith that I had developed from Baba's sentences, the examples I gave you, and there are quite many examples. So there came a day when I said to Daddy Janki, you know, I was adamant that I got to have some release to study in private, and she allowed me. So I took the Murlis in the middle of the afternoon. I used to be sales representative then, so I used to get my results some to prove myself that I'd done some work, and I used to study Murli in the middle of the afternoon in the car, park in such a way so that I'm facing the wall if possible, and open up the Murli after my lunch, and then make a pile of sentences that suggest only God can speak like this. So I spent 44 days like that, piling up these sentences, and that was really the turning point of my life.
The faith that this was God who was speaking.
That God is speaking, definitely God is here, and I became a bit more regular, even though some of my habits were not quite gone yet, but I kept on going in the knowledge, through the faith, only faith, that this is God speaking for sure.
Mm. It is amazing, and each one here could tell their own story of the magic of how they came into Gyan and the hooks that Baba used to pull them in, and the sustenance that Baba has given to keep them, to keep us here. As we look now to the future, because it is the first day of a new year, and you know, it's the beginning of what you could say as being the final chapter of service. What qualities, what strength, what practice do you think we need to really focus on now to reveal ourselves for who we truly are, and through that reveal Baba?
Zeal and enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm.
And that if you're really faithful, then you can be really, what's the word? You can be really, you can be really strong on explaining to the other person that what you really believe is this is the only path in the world. It comes out from your vibrations of faith. And those 44 days that I had spent, and that was my turning point of my life. That's the time I had to come to myself, to come into terms that I had to give up certain things, including omelette. Onion omelette that I loved. All that. I had to get
That's
up
a Hindi word, isn't it? Omelette.
Hindi word. I had to get up early morning every day, take shower in the cold winter like that, and I was prepared to do all that. Daddy Janki had been very clever with me. That time a sister called Chandrika from Mumbai had come to visit to her relations in London, and she used to live on my way. And I'm getting a bit more pakka now, if you can imagine the scene. And Daddy has called me one day. He said, no, a sister called Chandrika has just come from Mumbai. Could you please give a lift every morning? Like this. You'll get a lot of blessings. Somehow or the other, at that point, Baba has pulled my hair, kind of, and said yes. Quickly. I said, yes, I will bring her. But the next day I regretted it, because I had to get up early morning, take shower, early tea, this, that, the other, and bring her up, you know, to the center. But there was a benefit filled in me. Because I had a chance to listen to that sort of Murlis I gave you the example of. So that was my turning point.
That's
really
lovely. And that's a lovely idea as well of saying yes. You know, whatever is the opportunity that is being presented, just say yes.
Yeah, I just said yes, and that was advantageous for me.
Yeah, yeah. Any other final thoughts from our panel in terms of qualities to carry forwards into this new chapter of service?
I just, maybe just, for me, just thinking about Dada, actually, that we often forget Bap Dada, don't we? When we're talking about examples, he's a kind of like forgotten figure, isn't he? And I was thinking about, for me, three main qualities of Bap Dada is sweetness. My perception is sweetness, acceptance, and benevolence. I think, mate, that's all we need to be. You know, when you were in front of Bap Dada, he's very sweet, he's accepting everything, and he's totally benevolent. You know, and this is the casserole that probably we need to make.
Very beautiful. I was just going to close with a few words which I often come back to at this time of year. It's actually the words spoken by King George VI in his Christmas New Year message in 1939, when war had been declared. And
you don't look that old.
I've been reliably informed. Right. And the country was facing a very uncertain year. And in this address, King George VI read a poem that had actually been given to him by the 13-year-old Princess Elizabeth, our current queen, and he read these words, which to me I always remember at the first day of the year, and it's called The Gate of the Year. It's a very short poem called The Gate of the Year, and it's this. I said to the man who stood at the gate of the year, give me a light that I may tread safely into the unknown. And he replied, go out into the darkness and put your hand into the hand of God. That shall be better than light and safer than a known way. And that went out as an address to the whole nation. And for me, it just feels a lovely reminder at the beginning of the year that no matter how much darkness there is, if you have your hand in the hand of God, that is safer and more has more light than a known way. And that is our work, is to keep our hand in Baba's hand as we journey out into the year. So wishing everyone here a wonderful 2019. It's going to be a year full of many surprises. It's going to be a year of much revelation as we anticipate Sister Shivani's visit and everything that comes from that. And as we look back to the old of the establishment of London and carry those lessons forwards into the future, there's a lot there that we can draw on and really radiate out forwards as we journey together on our journey towards the next chapter. So thank you to all of you, our panellists. I think they deserve a round of applause.
Thank you to Philippa for sparking us.
Absolute pleasure. So we have just a few minutes to close with a meditation as we dedicate our good wishes to the coming year of 2019.